I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
That ever lived in your wrestling messiah. And I am here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, episode 87. It is the road to WrestleMania, less than a week away officially. And on this episode, we're going to talk some New Japan Pro Wrestling here in America. We're going to talk about the current road to WrestleMania and what I feel about the build-up. And for tonight, the review, as we do for the first time in a long time, a review of WrestleMania, I'm going back to what I kind of feel is sort of the last great big WrestleMania of sort of that rock and roll wrestling connection, that list of WrestleManias that sort of started it all. We're going to, since we are going to review WrestleMania 18, which was in Toronto, we're going to cover the last time before that, that WrestleMania was in Toronto. That, of course, being WrestleMania 6, where it was the ultimate challenge of the Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, versus the undisputed WWF World Heavyweight Champion, Hulk Hogan. All that and more on tonight's episode. So, where do we start? Should we start with New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong Style Involved? Or should I start with WrestleMania? And before you ask, yes, as of this recording, earlier, I'm recording this on Sunday, April 1st. So yes, I do know that Sakura Genesis happened. I've not watched all of it, so that will be on the next review where I will talk about it. Let's just start with the build. Like I said, we're on the road to WrestleMania. And, overall, this card is looking to be awesome. I can already tell one of the nag fests, trying to be more PG, folks, is definitely going to be who ends up on the pre-show, which is going to suck. I mean, I don't have a problem with stuff being on the pre-show if they were to open the gates earlier. In that sense, people should be a little bit more obvious that there's going to be stuff on the pre-show. So, yeah, be there early. If you nag about this stuff and you're going to the show, be there So that at least there's some crowd for those supposed pre-show matches. And I definitely think both Battle Royals should be on the pre-show. I mean, just a matter of fact. I don't think the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royals should ever be on the main show. They should be pre-show stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you look at New Japan Pro Wrestling at Wrestle Kingdom. They always have the New Japan Battle Royal. That's before the show. And there's a reason for it. But it's a fun little thing. It's a way to get all the other wrestlers on the card. In that sense, I don't have a problem with Battle Royals being used that way. But as long as they're on the pre-show. It's just going to be what else is going to be on the pre-show. They're not going to do it to the Usos. I know that. You look at let's run down the card, by the way, and then we'll look at what's going to happen. We have Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss. You have Charlotte versus Asuka, of course. And, you know, I have this sneaking suspicion because of how they're trying to showcase the women's division. They're not going to put those women's matches on the pre-show. Of course, you have both heavyweight matches. You have Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns for the Universal title. AJ Styles versus Nakamura for the WWE title. No way in hell those are being put on the pre-show. My God, if they were to put AJ Styles and Nakamura on the pre-show, they would literally riot. You would not have a WrestleMania because they would riot. Same for Ronda Rousey, Kurt Angle versus Triple H's Stephanie McMahon match. Same for what is going to be. We all know it's coming. But we're enjoying the story anyway. Cena versus Taker, whenever that gets announced. You have the, I don't think it's going to be an intercontinental match, which is The Miz versus Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor. And I don't think it's going to be the Usos versus New Day versus Bludgeon Brothers, because the Usos aren't going to stand for being put on the pre-show. I think it's going to come down, and they may both go on there. I think it may be the U.S. title match. A fatal four-way between Rusev, Randy Orton, I'm blanking, Jinder Mahal, and Bobby Roode. And, I had the sneaking suspicion they might put, the tag match, the Raw tag match, Cesaro and Sheamus, The Bar versus Braun Strowman and whoever his partner might be. Now, what would be great is if all that wasn't, and it was just the two Battle Royals, but they're going to have the two Battle Royals, and some match is going to be there right before the show as the crowd is hot. Adrian Neville and Austin Aries for the Cruiserweight title, which I forgot, that may also be it. That match that gets the crowd hot. I mean, that was there in 31. At 32, you had the U.S. title match. And that's why I also have a sneaky suspicion that it's going to be a U.S. title match. Because 32 was the U.S. title match. Last year, it was the U.S. title match. I'm trying to remember if that was the Intercontinental title. It may have been the Intercontinental title because it was Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin. We'll see. But I think it could probably be, it may be both the United States title and the Cruiserweight title. But for the Cruiserweight title, I'm really hoping that it's like put somewhere in the middle of Mania. That, I think, would be the best spot because, that could be that match of like, okay, so we're tired and maybe had some special thing and, this is the match that will get everybody excited and start to build towards maybe the finale of matches. But, you heard me run down the card as we know it's going to be, of course, with the asterisk being Cena Taker, because it hasn't officially been announced. You know, and let's all be honest, we're going to be tuning in Monday to see what happens, because the whole excitement here is going to be, is it going to be Dead Man Taker, or are we going to get Badass Kid Rock, Limp Bizkit, Biker Taker? I'm kind of actually hoping for Biker Taker, just so that we can, like, because so many people have shit on that part of Undertaker's gimmick, that I just want to see him do it just to, like, you know, justify it. And, you know, if you think about it, having to be Biker Taker makes sense, because when Cena came in, Undertaker was in that persona, and that was the persona that sort of gave Cena the nod after his first night when he faced Kurt Angle. And it was sort of nod of, like, Taker giving the nod to the new guy. And, you know, that sort of would be what Cena knows as Taker. So that would make sense. You know, they're probably pulling it really late just because to give Undertaker the most time to be ready. We're going to get the match they always wanted. Just too bad it couldn't be for the streak, because Vince wanted to end it 4 years ago. But, you know, WrestleMania 34, regardless, is turning out to be great. I really don't think anyone can sit there and complain about the matches that are going to be there. You know, Usos finally getting their WrestleMania match against the New Day and the Bludgeon Brothers is going to be tight. Braun Strowman in the tag match with whoever his partner is, it's going to be a surprise. You know it is. And, you know, Cesaro and Sheamus are going to get these hands. Both women's matches are absolutely excellent in their story, whether it be, you know, wanting to see Nia Jax, who, again, you know, I remember her coming in being so green, but she has put the work in and done a great job in developing and evolving. And, you know, I think everybody here can see, want to see her, you know, beat Alexa Bliss, who has played such a great heel over the past more than 6 months, but particularly being champion on Raw, she has been a great heel. And just when you think she's going to lose it, she doesn't. And, you know, they had started, I mean, it's been more than a year that they've been rolling with the Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss as a sort of team. And you can see that this is the storyline that would play out, and it's great because in a way it sort of reflects this the conquering idea of, you know, Nia Jax isn't the so-called picturesque society woman who is going to defeat Alexa Bliss, who is sort of the what made people think of a woman wrestler. And so the breaking of that barrier, in a way, is going to make that match right. And then, of course, you got Charlotte versus Asuka, two of the best women's wrestlers in the entire world, going at it, is just as much of a dream match as Shinsuke Nakamura versus AJ Styles. I hope both of them get put later in the card. You know, I think Lesnar and Reigns is going to be strong. I think Reigns has done a good job in selling this match so far. Now you got the attraction match with Angle and Ronda Rousey versus the McMahons. The dream, anyway, another dream match in Cena and Taker whenever it gets announced. Both tag matches, as I said, are going to be good. Almost like a champion, like pretty much every match almost is going to be a title match with the exception of a few. It's just going to be really, and you know, the Cruiserweight match. Cedric Alexander, will he finally climb the mountain, or will it be stolen once again by one of the greatest wrestling stories going on today that nobody talks about, Mustafa Ali, who, you know, entered wrestling, was a police officer, entered wrestling, had been on indie promotion. Nobody knew about him until the Cruiserweight Classic. At least nobody that only watches sort of mainstream stuff and only Ring of Honor and New Japan and WWE. I had never heard of him until the Cruiserweight Classic, and has just, every time he comes out, he absolutely impresses. And to see him get the shot at the big time, again, this is why I want the Cruiserweight title to be on that main card. It's going to be in New Orleans. It's going to be wonderful. I just can't wait. It's going to be awesome. And speaking of things that was awesome, this past week, we had New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong Style Evolved in Long Beach, California, at the new Pyramid Stadium thingy. I forget the name, because I don't actually have the name of the stadium in front of me, so I apologize. But it's, I guess, a new stadium type thing in Long Beach. Looks like a pyramid. I don't have the full card in front of me, so I'm just going off the cuff. You know, generally, I enjoyed it. You know, you had all those opening matches that were sort of, you know, the tag team and the six-man teams and the four-man teams that were about sort of setting up stuff that would happen later on down the road. And they were all fine. Though, of interesting to note, you had Cody and Marty versus the Gorillas of Destiny. And again, building that storyline. That would, of course, be much later. That was very enjoyable. I wish Yujiro Takahashi was on the card. I missed him. So, those matches were good. A particular good, you know, the junior heavyweight match between Jushin Thunder Liger and Will Ospreay. Really good. Of course, Mysterio coming out, giving a great speech before, promising that he will wrestle in a New Japan Pro Wrestling ring. I expect that whatever negotiations he has, possibly with WWE, will have something more along the lines of maybe being like Jericho, to where he can do that. Which I think is a good thing for WWE, because I think, like Jericho, Rey Mysterio will be seen as sort of a WWE guy. Because that's where he's had his biggest success at. And I think that only works for WWE's benefit. I think it certainly has, in the sense of what Jericho did with just one match with Omega in New Japan. Gotta watch those. But that was a great match. Of course, Marty Skrull being just an absolute dastardly villain, ripping the mask off, but doing the surprise attack on Ospreay, doing the surprise, you know, as Ospreay was saying, like, let's have me and Mysterio, possibly for the belt. And then Mysterio getting involved in him and Marty Skrull getting Mysterio and ripping the mask off and then putting it on his head and posing with the belt. Like, just great villain work right there. Like, there is no way anybody will cheer him. Like, when you do that, when you rip something as sacred as a lucha mask off somebody who is as much of a complete babyface as Rey Mysterio, oh, I may like you, but I hope you get your ass kicked. And I want to see Marty Skrull get his ass kicked, and I will be tuning in to see it, whether it be from Ospreay or Mysterio. So that was a good match. Very underrated, I think, what was the co-main event to the main event, which was Switchblade Jay White defending the IWGP United States title against Hangman Page. I really enjoyed that match. Just hard-hitting, and just, they went back and forth, and it was sort of a great, that's New Japan Pro Wrestling to me. Like, that's a New Japan Pro Wrestling match with suplexes, Avalanche suplex, just tons of different suplexes. And I think they were great. And I love the finishing sequence of where, of countering out of Hangman Page finisher into his switchblade, aka Sister Abigail, aka Rolling Flatliner. And just some big spots, you know, the super release German on the apron. Not supposed to hit on the apron, but like Paige missed it. The Avalanche swinging net breaker. The moonsault from Paige. Paige, I thought, came out of this match looking really, really good. I think this was the best showing I've seen of him. Because I really only looked at him like sort of a utility guy and everything. But, no, he came out looking really, really well in that. And it's a great match, and I don't think it's going to get talked a lot about. It's not as good as the main event, and we're going to get to the main event. But, it was certainly a solid match. I very much enjoyed it. And then, last but not least, we had the main event. We had the Golden Lovers, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi versus the Young Bucks. And yeah, I'm just going to sit here and say it. It's right now tied for match of the year. It's tied, and yet I know which one it is. You know, all the emotion, the moves, the amazingness, the drive for this match as it went along was amazing. The storytelling by Kenny of not wanting to fight his best friends, but having to fight his best friends. You know, the anger by Matt, in a way, trying to be peacekeeper, yet trying to also win the match. All of those things went really well in this match. Just so many, you know, the setting up the table. Here's an instance where I love the setting up of the table. Because they made, you know, as you know, I make mention of, whenever a table is set up, you know they're going to use it. And so many times they just keep teasing and they don't make you forget about it. And so you know it's there. So you know whatever the finish is not going to happen until they go through the table. But if they're smart, they'll set up the table, in a way tease it, maybe once or twice, but then go away from it and do nothing to remind you of it, so you forget it's there. So even though you know the match can't end before they go through that table spot, or the surprise table spot, as we had in this match, you forget it, and sort of, it allows you to be like, oh, it could end here. Young Bucks, they did it here. You know, for those who remember my criticisms of both Okada Omega matches, which again I understand they were great, but that was one of my criticisms was, or in particular the first one, they brought out the table, and for the next 20 minutes they kept teasing the table. It's like, well, I know this match is not going to finish until something happens with the table. Just go to the table. Here, first thing, Nick brings out the table and he's setting up, but Matt stops him. Like, okay. And then they go and continue wrestling. Till a little bit while later, where Matt pissed off, like, you know what? Let's set up the table. And he sets up the table. And then they go away from it again for a good 10 minutes. And so, it's like, they first bring out the table, leave it alone. Set up the table, leave it alone. And they did a teasing spot after setting it up that didn't happen. And it wouldn't be till near the finish they finally went to the table. But by that time, I had forgotten about the table and wasn't expecting it to be used. Like, it was just a facade. And there goes Nick with a Dean Ambrose-like elbow through Kenny Omega through the table. And then we get the surprise table shot of match action through, Kota Ibushi powerbombing Matt through the announcer table. And just all of the, you know, there were some botching, though. There was the sort of botch that looked like it really hurt, where, you know, Kenny Omega does the, basically the Rolling Thunder. Not Rolling Thunder, but the Rolling Fireman's Carry, and he goes to jump on to, like, the second rope, and then Ibushi is falling behind him, hits the Shooting Star, rolls through, but he didn't roll far ahead enough, and Omega didn't have enough height, so like they look like they collided as he hit the moonsault. And there were some other moves that, between Ibushi and Omega, didn't look as crisp. But, yeah, just, it wasn't in the moves, it was in the story, and it was absolutely amazing. This was probably the best Young Bucks match I have ever seen, and I know there's a lot of great Young Bucks matches, but just as far as telling story and wrestling, I thought this was the best outing I've seen them in. And you guys know, I've talked about it before, that the Young Bucks, along with Kenny Omega, are those type of wrestlers. You know, Randy Orton's another one that I put in this category, that I think are so good they sometimes forget and to realize how good they are. And when they're not personally invested in a match, it sometimes seems like they're just going by the motions of, you know, what they do. But because they're so smooth at it, it doesn't even look like they're not caring. And not that they're not caring, but it just doesn't look like, you know, and I don't want to sit there and say they're not putting effort into it. But again, it's that thing out to where they're so smooth, you know, I don't think you really realize this is not them at their best. They're not putting their best because it's not the type of spot to put their best, but it can leave sometimes the matches a bit emotionless. You didn't have that here. All the emotion was there. They pulled out every stop. Like I said, it's a 5 out of 5 star match. And it's right now, and maybe I'll watch them later and feel differently. The match, by the way, that it's tied with is Johnny Gargano versus Cien Almas at NXT TakeOver Philadelphia. And yes, full disclosure, I was at that takeover. So I felt that emotion. And same emotion that I felt there, I could feel from the crowd watching this match. My reason why I like Gargano versus Almas better than this match, though, comes from that I think that match is a little bit tighter. You know, the moves are a bit crisper in my mind. And just the pace, you know, went a little bit, and just again, crisper, just everything a little bit crisper, a little bit more exciting, and just, you know, you felt it through the arena. I mean, and yes, I was there, and I can imagine it was sort of the same feeling here, but again, I just think that was just, I keep coming back to that word, crisper. I just think it was a tad bit more crisper than this match, but like, understand this. I both think these are 5-star matches. I both think these are match of the year candidates. You know, I'm saying that if at the end of the year it comes down to these two and I have to pick between the two, this is why I'm picking Johnny Gargano versus Aljani Cien Almas. Mind you, again, I'd like to add, we've not had WrestleMania yet, which, first of all, we've not had NXT TakeOver yet. We've not had WrestleMania yet. I've had Ring of Honor Supercard yet, which is all happening this week. And by the way, we're only in March. So much can happen. So it's kind of hard to be talking about match of the year, but I can definitely say without a doubt, this is a match of the year candidate. Absolutely amazing. Overall, the card was good for Strong Style Evolved. You had your typical undercard. It's what New Japan does. But sort of those, I believe they were the final three matches. The junior heavyweight match, the IWGP United States title match, and then the special tag team main event. I'm sure I'm missing something here. So I apologize for that, but yeah. I just loved it. Worth checking out, but more importantly, worth those three matches checking out. So, that was New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong Style Evolved. And again, New Japan Pro Wrestling taking on the challenge of, you know, breaking through and trying to enter the American market. Speaking, by the way, of challenges, I think it's time for what was called the Ultimate Challenge. As it's time to review WrestleMania 6. So, WrestleMania 6, like I said, tagline Ultimate Challenge, with a picture of course, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, on the posters. Presented by the World Wrestling Federation, took place on April 1st, 1990. Yes, it was an April Fool's Day WrestleMania. It took place in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, at the Sky Dome, to an attendance of 67,678. Ladies and gentlemen, this is WrestleMania 6. WrestleMania 6, which, you know, I have very faint memories. Like, I remember the main event. I remember crying after this main event, because again, I was such a huge Hulk Hogan fan, and like, I was so sure that Hulk Hogan was going to, you know, turn away the challenge of the Ultimate Warrior, and when he did, like, you couldn't stand to see him lose, you know, and of course Hogan would, you know, for the most part dominate through pay-per-views and all this time, and to see him lose to the Ultimate Warrior, I remember that. I remember crying immensely. It was sort of the same cry I would have, I would think this is 1990, so, a year later, or year and a half year later, when, you know, he would lose to the under. I remember that. Like, those are the two big cries in wrestling I remember having as a kid. I remember crying when Ultimate Warrior beat Hulk Hogan, and I remember crying when Undertaker beat Hulk Hogan. Like, that. So for everybody that, like, knocks Hulk Hogan and is taking advantage of, you know, his misfortunes of the past couple years, they jump all over him, that really don't understand what he meant to a lot of people. Yeah. I cried when he lost. So, And I'm going to try to steer as much away from that political quagmire, because I'm not really in the mood to discuss that political quagmire, because that's a whole different story. So I didn't really remember much about this WrestleMania, so I do feel like I kind of went into this going fresh. I mean, I knew Warrior and Hogan. I knew that DDP drove the Cadillac with Shake, Rattle, and Roll. But I always thought it was to a match. I didn't realize it was to a concert that, oh God, I'm blanking on it. Greg the Hammer Valentine. And, because they don't have him in the notes. The Honky Tonk Man had the concert with Jimmy Hart and the sort of honkettes on background music, which would be broken up, of course, by, you know, Butch, Mitch, the Bushwhackers. And that was a fun segment. Of course, they teased that, you know, celebrities. They had Mary Tyler Moore. There was a part where they interviewed her as they were talking to people about, were they excited for Shake, Rattle, Roll's new record? And you could see, like, I mean, Mary Tyler Moore seemed excited to be there and excited for the main event. She had probably no idea what they were talking about in regards to Shake, Rattle, and Roll. I mean, I don't know whether she was acting that. I mean, she was acting that. That's pretty damn good. But I'm pretty much in belief she had no idea what they were talking about. But she was there, some other sort of, I guess, new celebrity or Canadian celebrities. Not Ray Allen, because Ray Allen's a wrestler. Something Allen. But I know that he was sort of a big comedian in, like, the 70s and late 80s. I'm blanking on, I just remember the last name. And he did a couple of comedic pieces, like trying to help the Bolsheviks. That word just snuck up on me. Boris Zhukov and Nikolai Volkov's team, let's just say. Note to self, when you get to that match, do not try to say the name Bolokovich. My tongue doesn't move that way. Anyways, so let's get into it. We did have one dark match. We had Paul Roma versus the Brooklyn Brawler. Time they give me is unknown. but defeated the Brooklyn Brawler in a single match. The other thing to really note is that there's only two matches that had a post-10-minute time in their matches. Which, again, is really amazing. When you really think about it, that there's only two matches that went post 10 minutes. And by the way, they were DiBiase versus Jake Snake Roberts, which was at 11 minutes, 50 seconds. And then the last match, which went almost 23 minutes at 22 minutes, 51 seconds. Everything else under 10 minutes. So, and the reason I say that is there's so many matches on this list where you're going to hear me say the same thing. You're going to hear me say, my God, I can't believe this match was so short. They put so much and it was moving so fast that you thought it was 10 minutes long at least. You know, and that's the thing about matches during this era is that matches during this era were moving so quickly and so fast that it's hard to believe that they were under 10 minutes. Like, you felt like they packed so much into it, you felt it was longer. They didn't have sort of the resting that's especially prevalent in today's wrestling. They weren't trying to draw out matches. I think this was definitely more of a New York style, Northern style of wrestling, where it was still in that idea of trying to look competitive, and so the matches went really fast. And it's hard to believe they went that fast. You know, I was listening to Talk of Jericho. It was the episode where they had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn on, and they were talking about this, like, to where people don't realize how fast these matches were, and they're right. And I'm certainly surprised by how fast these matches went. You know, you have 15 matches on the card. I think the entrances, when you total them up, went longer than at least most of the card. With, if you took out the DiBiase and Hogan match, I think the entrances for total for the night went longer than the actual card itself. And I mean, they did also have, I think, an intermission, which would be nice this year's WrestleMania. Anyways, so the first match, Rick Martel versus Coco Beware, I thought was a good opening match, very fast pace. Loved sort of the story here of Coco Beware going for, you know, Rick Martel sort of staying on Ware early, but then Coco Beware starts to build up and he hits some move, but then he goes for one top move too many, sort of classic wrestling storytelling, and that leads to Rick Martel picking up the win. So I thought that was a very good opening match for built up the villain. And I thought both of them looked really good in the match, considering that it was sort of the opening match. And again, it's only 4 minutes long. But again, the fast pace. Then you had for the WWF Tag Team Championships, you had the champions, the Colossal Connection of Andre the Giant and Haku with Bobby Heenan versus Demolition, Axe and Smash. I really enjoyed this match. Again, it is almost 10 minutes long. It's 9 minutes and 30 seconds. I really enjoyed it. And again, I think this is one of those matches of the card that is going to be underlooked, because outside of actually what happened after the match, I don't think most people remember it. But I think it was a solid, I mean, it is big guys just clobbering each other. But that sort of discounts, you know, Haku's abilities, I think. Because Haku was very good in this match. Looked very dangerous with his kicks and everything. Considering that really he was the one doing all the work, and at this time Andre couldn't really do this. Because this was Andre's sort of last pay-per-view and sort of TV match. I mean, he would come back, I think, at next year's WrestleMania on that sort of walk-on spot. But this was really his last sort of wrestling match. And, you know, what happened afterwards, where when after they lost the Demolition, and they, you know, Bobby Heenan blamed him for it and slapped him, that leading to Andre cutting ties with Bobby Heenan, knocking Haku out, and getting on the thing by himself and leaving them. Like, leaving on a high note, basically turning babyface, in a way, and leaving to an incredibly huge pop in the Sky Dome is, I think, very underrated as far as a moment in wrestling. Because, again, that was the end for Andre. And for him to leave it, such a huge ovation, that was well-deserved. And again, what led up to that was also good, though. Which is, again, Haku dominating, I think it was Smash. And then with the occasional hit from Andre. But then that hot tag, and it, Andre getting caught in the, leading to them getting Andre caught in the ropes, then being able to double team Haku and be able to get the win. It was classic tag team wrestling in that sense. You know, where Haku was trying to keep the other person away from the corner, allowing Andre's big size to keep him in the corner, but when he was able to get out and get the hot tag, he turned it around and led to the win. So in that one sense, it was a sort of classic 1980s wrestling match. It had classic tag team wrestling fundamentals in it. And I think it's just overlooked because the size of the men in it. But yeah, I definitely thought that was a good match. You had Earthquake defeat Hercules in under 5 minutes in the next match. Again, this is part of the build-up to Earthquake. Because very soon after this, he would start to feud with Hulk Hogan. In fact, it would be him who would take Hulk Hogan out. But this is a solid, again, solid match. You had sort of the unvol object versus the irresistible force, in this case being Hercules. But in this case, the irresistible force Hercules lost out. But, you know, it was a solid match. Again, this was more of a squash for Earthquake. And again, this is something that's also sort of different to where you would have these sort of squash matches that were all about building up one wrestler's repetition on something like WrestleMania. So it was an okay match. Bruce Beefcake versus Mr. Perfect. Solid. But there's not really much to it. I mean, Mr. Perfect, I mean, I can watch him wrestle all day long. Any era. He's that damn good. But again, I don't know. The story felt a little flat. You know, realizing that it's Beefcake who defeated Mr. Perfect's perfect streak. But again, I think that also highlights how much of a fan favorite Bruce Beefcake became during this era. And I think a lot of people forget that. So in that sense, I kind of do understand it. It's just hard to see it looking back. But it was a solid match. And of course, shenanigans happening afterwards. Mr. Perfect running away. Genius getting a haircut. Then we come to the next match. And oh boy. Now, I really don't remember, but I know people referencing this anytime this meeting gets talked about. Bad News Brown versus Roddy Piper. This was the match in which Roddy Piper painted himself half black. Now, according to apparently from what I can find on the web, one of that being the, What Culture Wrestling, 10 interesting facts about, each WrestleMania. And the one they talk about, like, basically, he was convinced to do this as a joke, and I would imagine that maybe Bad News Brown was maybe in on this joke. I hope it was. I mean, I hope he was. You know, it's always difficult talking. You know, here I was earlier saying I don't really want to talk about political quagmires. Here I am about to talk about a political quagmire. It's always difficult in one sense to talk about something like blackface. Because, you know, knowing the history and understanding why it offends people. At the same time, wanting to sit there and look at it reasonably and say that wasn't the intent, but at the same time it was the intent storyline, because you basically had these two absolute rule breakers trying to get under each other's skins, and like Roddy Piper being the, you know, as we called him, the old school dude who was rude before it was cool. Again, everything I see, it seems like maybe Bad News was in on it, and maybe it was a rib on Rowdy, that this was okay. I mean, everything that I know about Roddy Piper sits there and tells me that's what happened. And of course, if what Culture is reporting is also true as well, and again, I put that little caveat there, I mean, I know they I trust them because I think they always check their sources. But that doesn't mean they can't always be wrong. Or can't be wrong. But... yeah. What happened is apparently they tricked his paint and so he couldn't wash it off. And so he had to go into an airport looking painted half black. Which sucked. But yeah, it's weird. It in a way, it's very uncomfortable. You know, it's obviously somebody ribbed Piper. It's agreeing with this. That's the only explanation I can think of. And, you know, the match... The hard part is that Bad News Brown matches weren't always that good. I'm just going to come out and say it. I mean, I have respect for the wrestler. I'm sure he was good other places outside of WWE, but I never remember really liking a match he was involved in WWE. And, you know, this is just a slugfest. Just that ended up in a double countout. You know. And they just slugged all the way to the back. And the match felt very confusing, very lackluster, and very disappointing in that sense. And then you add how uncomfortable it can make people feel. Whether, you know, Piper had permission to do it or not. And by all accounts, he probably did and probably was a rib on him. You know, it's just one of those matches I think better left skipped, you know. Watch it for yourself, and I would say make a choice. I mean, the reason I'm struggling here is it actually doesn't affect me. You know, I always see myself as a reasonable person, and I believe multiple things, but basically, I feel comfortable watching a lot of things, a lot of difficult things. So it doesn't really bother me. I also, not that I know Piper, but again, you know, knowing stories, knowing, as all fans do, getting to know wrestlers, it's hard. I'm just gonna say, it's more difficult to watch this because it's a bad match to me than any sort of offense that might be accidental because of characters. I mean, it leaves for a whole different story to talk about as far as wrestling and where the lines are, and which is something that it's always, the line is always changing. It like comedy is always trying to push the line, trying to see what's good taste, what's not. You know, in the line of good taste, you don't know where it is, and to evolve it, you have to push it. But that wasn't one of those This wasn't one of those situations. And again, I think if the match was at all good, I don't think people would have a problem with what happened. But I think because the match was lackluster and disappointing, it just makes the very weird choice that Piper painting himself black, that again has to be a rib, all that more confusing and uncomfortable in a way. Moving, speaking of uncomfortable, the Bolsheviks, wow, I think I actually said it, faced off against the Hart Foundation the next match in a match that would in a match that would make them good buddies with Daniel Bryan, as the Hart Foundation defeated Boris Zukov and Nikolai Volkov in 19 seconds after they jumped them from behind, did a Pearl Harbor job, as they were singing their national anthem. yeah, this was, I guess, to give the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, a win. Sports are from Canada. Yeah, I feel bad for the Hart Foundation, and I feel bad for the Bolsheviks. I feel bad for both. Here they are at WrestleMania, and their whole match is 19 seconds. Or as we like to call it, the Daniel Bryan effect. And now that I have everybody mad at me. So our next match, again, another one of those. I mean, it wasn't as much of a squash as Hercules versus Earthquake was. This was definitely more of a... It was more in the same vein of Coco Beware versus Rick Martel match, where you had a villain. You had Tito trying to overcome him and coming also close. But, of course, because of Bobby Heenan getting involved, it allowed his wrestler to pick up the win. This was definitely better than the Martel versus Beware match. This match... this is the match most of all, by the way. That like 4 minutes, 33 seconds. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. Hold the F on. There is no way this match for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. You know, even counting out the entrances. And which by the way, most entrances were the, you know, with the sort of the ring thing going down the aisle. But even cutting the entrances out, this match had to be more than 5 minutes. Had to be. It's physically impossible. But sure enough, it according to official time, 4 minutes, 32 seconds. That's how fast Tito Santana was moving in this match. He put so much content into this match of trying, this tour classic of this not maybe not a small guy, but like, a non sort of power guy and a finesse guy trying to take down a big guy, big power guy in the Barbarian. And of course, not being able to because of classic heel manager technique, but you know, and it's, I suggest giving the match the watch because it's a very good looking Tino Santana. I mean, the match is all about building Bobby Heenan's newest acquisition in the Barbarian. So there are some things about it. I think it's a good match to show just how fast these matches moved at some times. Speaking of a match that I can't believe didn't go 10 minutes, considering that you had wrestlers in there who did not move fast at all. You had the mixed tag team match of Macho King Randy Savage and Queen Sherry versus the American Dream, if you will, Dusty Rhodes and Sapphire, with their surprise guest, Miss Elizabeth, in their corner. I thought this was a very fun match. And you had the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, if you will. And Sapphire looking like they're having so much fun in the match. Macho Man just out of his mind. Great storytelling part of this match. You know, again, I wonder, was this the first mixed tag team match ever? I believe it was, because no, there wasn't one in WrestleMania. I don't believe there was one at WrestleMania 22. I know there wasn't one at WrestleMania 3. I know there was one. At 4 or 5. I believe this is the first ever mixed tagged wrestling match. At least on WrestleMania. I don't know if it was the first one ever in WWE. I'm sure somebody, anybody could send me information on that. But, yeah, I thought this match was fun. I thought there was great storytelling in it. Sapphire, I thought, did a good job considering not really being a wrestler. I think Queen Sherry helped her out a little bit, definitely, to where everything felt natural. And, of course, the finish where Miss Elizabeth got involved and pushed Queen Sherry over Sapphire, allowing Sapphire to get the win, in which I have to think about it. That was the other thing that was popping in my mind. I would have to look it up, but I wonder if that's the first, I believe it's the first ever win by an African-American woman, or African-American woman, excuse me, possibly in the WWE, if not, definitely at WrestleMania, if not the first ever win. Because the bad news, Coco B, I don't know, and it's bothering me, because I can't remember in the first five WrestleManias of Bobby Brown winning. I believe, if I remember right, didn't the Refrigerator Perry win the Battle Royal in WrestleMania 2? You had that. You also had Mr. T winning it both 1 and 2. That, for whatever reason, surprise, surprise, skipped my mind. But, yeah. But definitely the first ever win on WrestleMania by an African-American woman. That's very historic when you think about it. And considering the marks against WWE, as far as women with color, you know, her, Jacqueline, Jazz, you know, there are some African American women wrestlers that people forget to talk about. Definitely when they talk about WWE, for whichever reason. But, you know, again, I love the match. It was fun, enjoyable to watch. I thought one of the best matches of the night just because of that fun and sort of the zaniness in it. It definitely, I think, had a lot more story than the other matches. Our next match, tag team match, the Oriental Express of Pat, Tanaka, and Sato with Mr. Fuji versus the Rockers of Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels. This was a solid tag match. The count out of Marty Jannetty due to salt in the eyes. And I thought great selling, by the way, in that by Jannetty to where, you know, he can't see and he literally goes over the railing. So great selling in that standpoint. But, you know, it was just a solid tag match. But it also felt like it was put there to sort of be a break after, in its own way, after the intensity and sort of all the emotion that came out of the Dusty Rhodes, Sapphire versus Sherry and Savage mixed tag match. But yeah, still a solid, good tag match. And again, according to What Culture Pro Wrestling, Shawn Michaels was hungover. Yeah. Here's a match that I love Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I really do, but Skip at Jim Duggan versus Dino Bravo, who is with Earthquake and Jimmy Hart, defeats him in here's the one match to where everything else is like, wow, this match had to be longer. This is another one to where it's like, you can't tell me this went more than 2 minutes. And yet, sure enough, it went 4 minutes and 15 seconds. But, yeah. This really had nothing to it. And I say that as somebody who likes Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I mean, just talking about this match is making me tired. I'm like, ready to go to sleep. It's like, are you kidding me? Really, it was more about Earthquake because you had Jim Duggan able to one-up them, break up their ruse, and then use his... which, by the way, apparently was not illegal. He used his 2x4, but apparently it was a Canadian 2x4, so it wasn't illegal. As was mentioned later. By the comedian Allen. But there's not really much that happened about the match, and it was more about what happened after the match to where you had Earthquake destroying Jim Duggan. And again, getting that heat on Earthquake. So in that sense, it's skippable in my mind because it wasn't even really about the match. It became more about what happened after the match. But next, we have a match that definitely should be a watch for everybody. The one of only two matches that went 10-plus minutes at 11 minutes, 50 seconds for the Million Dollar Championship, Ted DiBiase with Virgil versus Jake the Snake Roberts. I love this match. Again, I love the psychology of this match, which, you know, Jake the Snake, when he's at his best, all his matches have great psychology a part of them. And DiBiase, very smooth throughout the ring. Again, just all the psychology to where Ted DiBiase was desperate to try to be basically a step ahead of Jake the Snake as he kept going for the DDT and the slip out to like stop from getting the DDT. And then the build to the finish to where Jake is in control. DiBiase through Virgil gets, is able to take over the match. And they wear Jake down and down and down with moves and holds and submissions. But then Jake is able to break free and the build up and the short on clothesline. And he's setting up for that. But Virgil, drags DiBiase out. Jake goes for Virgil, knocks him down, but DiBiase knocks Jake the Snake down, knocks him into the post, but Virgil is able to get up and throw DiBiase into the ring so he doesn't get counted out, giving him the win. Just so much great psychology throughout this entire match. It's a very underrated match. Could it be better if it was given more time? Absolutely. But considering this entire card, and how much time a lot of people weren't given, there are a couple matches to where I'm like saying, like, you could take this match and this match out and give that time to this match, but, like, I would say that about the Duggan match. I would say that about, I hate to say it. I'd say it about the Hart Foundation Bolshevik match. Or maybe I would give the Duggan Bravo time to them. Let's not get into that one yet. But the thing I also love about this is that sort of the story of this match also flowed into the next match, which was Big Boss Man versus Akeem with Slick, you know, the breakup of the Twin Towers, which, you know, Akeem and Big Boss Man were a team managed by Slick. But because, of course, Boss Man refused to take money from DiBiase, DiBiase then paid Akeem and Slick to turn on him. And, you know, they come to the ring. Jake had chased DiBiase and Virgil to the back. But as they're coming out, DiBiase comes back and jumps Boss Man from behind and beats the hell out of him. And throws him in for Akeem. Now, again, this match, which seemed like it was only 2 minutes, went pretty much 2 minutes at a minute 49. But again, to where Akeem is working on him, but Bossman fights back and hits that Bossman slam for the win. I mean, I, in a way, include that as part of the DiBiase-Jake the Snake match. And I think it all flows together, and it just makes it all that good, because again, you had these flowing storylines into one another. The next match after that, which could have been good if given way more time than it was, it basically went 4 minutes at 3 minutes and 59 seconds, but Rick Rude with Bobby Heenan in what I believe was maybe his last match. Can't remember if it was this or WrestleMania 7. I don't remember him at WrestleMania. I looked that up. I should know because I know I reviewed it, but I believe this is possibly his last match. Last WrestleMania match, I mean. But Rick Rude versus Jimmy Snuka. This is a match that could have been good if given more time. But it was a lot of headbutts by Snuka till one errant headbutt too many, and then Rude Awakening, and Rick Rude picks the win, and he poses, celebrates, and then quickly leaves. And yeah, there wasn't a lot there. Whew. All right. That brings us to our main event. The Ultimate Warrior, the current Intercontinental Champion, facing off against Hulk Hogan, the WWF World Heavyweight Champion, in a match for both the Intercontinental and World Heavyweight Championship. This was, without a doubt, match of the night. It's a very enjoyable match. Again, this is sort of an over-the-top cheesiness with Warrior, and Hogan's energy just makes it so entertaining. They had this completely hot crowd that was absolutely into this match. I thought there was some great storytelling in the match. You know, for all the people who say Hogan doesn't really sell, Hogan did, I thought, did some great selling in the match. He stopped it too soon, but again, where he tweaks his knee. And, again, Hogan has this great ability to make you feel like he's in trouble and really be worried for him. And there weren't five moves. The thing I want to bring up is, again, I have not seen this in years. I have not seen this match. And, of course, a couple years ago, that was the thing that came out of Hogan talking about how he had to carry Warrior through this match because, after 5 minutes, Warrior was blown up and said, I want to go home. And Hogan made it go 15 more minutes. If I'm going to pass the torch to you, we're going to go time. And by the way, that story has been told many times by other people. So it's there was a whole radio interview that Hogan did about it and tons of other things. You can see it. You can see Hogan taking control, being basically running the match. After 5 minutes, it seemed like Warrior was tired. I think that's what led sort of the middle, where you had a lot of wear down moves and rest moves being thrown in. But still, the match is very enjoyable. I think it's a great show that Hogan definitely is a good wrestler. Maybe not as good as Hart or Flair by any means, but for wrestlers like him, he was a good wrestler. one thing I kept noticing how they were using a lot of stiff clotheslines and suplexes and like, oh, they're using strong style. And then all I could think about is that if I said that out loud, that T-Dub would kill me for suggesting that Warrior and Hogan were using strong style. But it really is the funny thing. Like, that's what they're doing. They're doing, you know, clotheslines and body slams and suplexes, and that's really all they're doing. And punches and chops. It's like, that's what we consider strong style today. You know, that's mostly what Ishii does, and we love him for it. I mean, obviously, character has a lot more that we sometimes don't realize, but, you know, still. But that was something I laughed at while watching the match, because I'm like, oh, people will kill me for suggesting that. But I thought it was a really good match, because I think the energy, the crowd in it, for both of them, I thought they told a really good story. You know, watching the finish, I liked the finish. Because, again, it was that surprise, move out of the way, hit and splash, and get the win. It protected Hogan's leg drop. Again, something that doesn't happen often anymore. Well, not, it does, but you know, you see a lot of times where they will hit the move and they will kick out of it. And they'll kick out of each other's moves a couple times before hitting the move and getting the win. But here, you know, they protected the leg drop, so it made it seem like if to where people could be saying, like, yeah, man, WrestleMania 6, if Hogan could have only hit the leg drop, he would have won. So, again, protecting that was very good. I think not many people talk about it. Like, it's a very enjoyable match. It was, in a way, supposed to be the passing of the torch to the Warrior to be sort of the next carrier, which didn't turn out so well for WWE, considering they put the belt back on a year later. But still, very good match. Match of the night. Just hot crowd. Tons of energy. Very enjoyable. Classic WWE 1980s wrestling. And really the last of it. Because, like, and I think I mentioned this when I reviewed WrestleMania 7. That year felt really like a transition from that into what would be sort of the early, because that, and along with, 91, 92, 93, 94 even, being sort of that new age of WWE, with 94 sort of being the official start of the new generation, being 94, 93, 95, and 96, being that new generation before 97 would bring us sort of the start of that transitional period into the Attitude Era. And we've talked about this many times, but, like, this was definitely sort of the, I mean, mind you, it would continue for a couple months before I think the transition would really start. And I don't think that transition really starts happening until that year's Royal Rumble. Not that year's, but the next Royal Rumble, in which Slaughter wins. But, yeah. This was definitely classic 1980s WWE wrestling. It's sort of a great, sort of, not, I don't want to say end of the era, but it was definitely the end, in a way, of, you know, Hulk Hogan always being the main guy. You know, past 5 years had been on Hogan's back, you know? I mean, you also had Macho Man there being, you know, if Hogan was AA, Macho Man was Hogan, was the face of the company AB, you know? But still, Hogan was a tremendous draw, and had basically been carrying the company. And, like, this was them, okay, we're officially going to do it again. We're going to pass it, and Warrior's going to be our guy of the future. And while it didn't turn out so well, they never relied on Hogan as much as they did during these past 5 years. And so there is that sort of very sad moment in that sense of at the end. I mean, it was great for Warrior, but at the same time, in a way, knowing that it's sort of the end of an era, as far as Hogan being absolutely always on top in WWE, or it's just at the time WWF, and really feeling like the end of that sort of rock and roll wrestling connection era that was 85 to 90. But again, that all goes because the match was very enjoyable, very entertaining. It's not the most technical wrestling, but it's still entertaining wrestling. And I thought they told a good story in the ring. So, with that being said, let's do our usual stick, top three moments. Number three, the Andre the Giant's send-off. It's really, in a way, a saddening moment when you think about it, but it's great to see him get the cheers he deserves and the standing ovation as he leaves. So that's number three. Number two, the pop for Miss Elizabeth. Like when she came out, like the pop almost rivaled the pop I think Warrior and Hogan got. That was definitely a moment of her coming back and like when nobody thought she'd be there. And for me, number one though would be to sort of, again, I know it now, but as a kid, it was so shocking. And you, if you put yourself in the mindset of what I think most kids and I think a lot of people felt, I think it surprised a lot of people. Warrior moving out of the way of that leg drop and hitting the splash for the 1-2-3. That was definitely a moment. So those are the top three moments, top three matches. Number three in very underrated match. Wish it was given more time, but very underrated. Had great psychology. Told a great story. Ted DiBiase versus Jake the Snake Roberts. At a very close number two to it is Dusty Rhodes and Sapphire versus Queen Sherry and Randy Savage. And of course, the history, I think, of being the first ever win at WrestleMania by an African-American woman, which I don't think would be repeated until Jazz, I believe, did it at WrestleMania 18. I may be wrong about that. I know that Jazz won at one of the WrestleManias. Maybe it was 17, 18, or 19. I can't remember. I will correct myself next week. Because I will know by then. Wink, wink to what I'm reviewing. But that's number two. And just a fun story and fun match. But number one is the match that they just built to and got you excited for all night long. Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan. Title versus title. Very enjoyable match. Everything that they promised. And I'll definitely watch the match again. I mean, I never thought I'd say that because, you know, in a way, Warrior always bored me. But again, because Hogan made that match carry on and put effort into that match, it's a watchable match and a match I'd gladly watch again. And yes, I've gotten over now crying about it. So, yeah, number one, Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan in somewhere. A couple of my good friends are laughing at me. I know it. Also, somewhere, Del Tor, I know you're listening. I know you're getting kicked out of this too. Because Del Tor is a huge Warrior fan. I have to get him on back on for another episode. If I can only figure out how to get back to recording Skype calls. But that's a whole story for a different day. So that's it for this episode. Final ratings, actually, before I forget. So ultimately, I give WrestleMania 6 a... I give it a 3.5 out of 5. You know what? Make it 4 out of 5. The Warrior-Hogan match is just that good to me. And there are some good matches throughout this card. They're very underrated. The mixed tag match between Dusty and Savage and Sapphire and Sherry, I thought was better than it had any right, honestly, being, but I'm so glad it did, and it told a lot of fun story in it. DiBiase and Jake the Snake deserve a whole lot more time, but was still good nonetheless. And there were a lot of matches to where, would it be Rude versus Snuka, Barbarian versus Santana, Hart Foundation versus Bolsheviks, to where I felt they should have been given more time. Beefcake versus Mr. Perfect. Even Martel versus Beware. I think if you give all these matches more time, they turn out to be much better matches. But they were still solid nonetheless. Really, the only two bad matches on this card are Duggan versus Bravo, which, again, you're not missing much. And then just the uncomfortableness and the confusion that is Piper versus Bad News Brown. But take those away, and the rest of the card really is solid. And, again, that main event delivered. And when a main event is pushed that hard and it delivers like it does... yeah, it's a good card. So, WrestleMania 6 gets a 4 out of 5 from me. And that is it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, emails, you can email Absolution Network at... You can email us at the Absolution Network at an.132productions@gmail.com. That's an.132productions@gmail.com, or excuse me, or something else. I'm going to get that email right as soon as later. You can also find us on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network. Search us, like us, and follow us there. And remember to check out all our other shows, including our shows from that dude in the straw hat, Shin Tiger Curl. And that is it for this episode. Next episode, I think, you know, we stay in Toronto as we watch the WrestleMania that gave us Icon versus Icon, Hogan versus The Rock. It's WrestleMania 18 on the next episode of CMG. So until then, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember that I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived, in your wrestling messiah, because I'm CMG. Recognize? You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, bring me down to negativity. But I believe, yes, I believe, I say that I believe. Stand on one feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want.